You may well ask yourself, how can such things happen? Why didn't our government guard against this communist infiltration during the New Deal and Fair Deal administrations? Well, the trouble was that some of the guards appointed by the administration were themselves the thieves of our security. Now, let's look and listen to the sworn testimony of a woman. She was a former worker in the Red Underground within the government until she became convinced she'd been following wrong and dangerous principles and philosophies. She then renounced her communist ties and testified under oath during the investigation. This is Elizabeth Bentley testifying before the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Would you tell the committee how the espionage organization operated in the United States and your participation in it?
It started with actual government employees in about July of 1941. And I had received word through Mr. Jacob Growers that a government employee in Washington was interested in setting up a group which would gather information for the communists.
Were these people government employees?
Yes, they were all government employees.
Now, who was head of the espionage group in the government?
The head of one espionage group was Mr. Nathan Gregory Silvermaster, who at that time was employed by the Farm Security Administration of the Agriculture Department and later by the Board of Economic Warfare.
Tell me, would you please stand? Do you know Elizabeth Bruce Bentley, who is standing?
I refuse to answer this question on the grounds that any answer I may give may be self-incriminating.
That was Mr. Silvermaster. In just a few minutes, we're going to play you a recording taken during Mr. Silvermaster's further testimony before the committee. But first, here are a few things we think you should know about this trusted employee of the New Deal. First, Nathan Silvermaster was born in Odessa, Russia. These notes also show that from 1935 to November 1946, he held various responsible positions with the government in the Resettlement Administration, in the War Labor Board, Farm Security Administration, in the Board of Economic Warfare, and the War Assets Administration. Silvermaster went also to the Bretton Woods Conference on the invitation of Harry Dexter White, who at that time was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. We want you to hear now a recording of the testimony as Nathan Silvermaster took the stand, accused under sworn testimony of being a member of the Communist Underground. You will hear the voices of Nathan Silvermaster being questioned by Attorney for the Government Robert Stripling.
Mr. Silvermaster, are you now, have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
I refuse to answer this question on the grounds which I have already stated. On the grounds that any statement I may make... I refuse to answer the questions on the ground that any answer I may make to this question may be self-incriminatory.
Mr. Silvermaster, do you know Earl Browder?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Shipley had asked a question.
I understand, but he's refused to answer the question whether or not he's a communist on the ground that his answer might incriminate him, which would indicate that his answer would be, if he told the truth, that he was a communist.
Mr. Shipley, go ahead.
Mr. Silvermaster, do you know Earl Browder?
I refuse to answer this question on the same grounds.
Did you know Jacob in jail?
I can't understand what you mean by the same grounds. Will you kindly explain which grounds they are as you go along?
On the grounds that any answer I may give before this committee to questions asked may be self-incriminatory. I mean, on the grounds that...
That's a constitutional defense. Proceed, Mr. Cripple.
Constitutional defense.
That's correct.
Did you know Jacob in Golov?
I want you to spell it out each time and not say same ground.
On the same grounds.
Did you know Jacob in Golov?
I refuse to answer this question on the same grounds, sir.
Did you know Gerhard Eisler?
Wait a minute. I want you to explain the grounds each time you answer the question.
On the grounds that the answer to this question may tend to be self-incriminating.
That was Mr. Nathan Gregory Silvermaster, named under sworn testimony by Elizabeth Bentley as a communist worker in the Red Underground within the United States government. All right now. Just let us ask you a question. If you were asked on a witness stand whether you were a communist, what would you answer? You would answer no, of course, unless perhaps you were a communist. Now let's see what Miss Bentley had to say about a man who held a much more responsible job within our government. A man who placed many, many accused members of the communist underground into government jobs.
Miss Bentley, were there any other individuals in the Treasury Department who were working with the Silvermaster Group?
Yes, there were. One of those was Harry Dexter White.
Now, what was his position?
At that time, he was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct. Miss Bentley, besides the Silvermaster Group, were there any other groups in the government that you were in charge of?
Yes, there was one other group, which we called the Perlow Group.
What was Mr. Perlow's first name?
Mr. Perlow's first name was Victor.
Victor Perlow?
That's correct.
Where was he employed?
He was employed in the WPB.
The War Production Board.
That's correct.
Miss Bentley, did you say this man Perlow was a communist?
Yes, he certainly was.
A member of the Communist Party?
Yes, he was a member of the Communist Party.
During the time that he was employed in the government service?
Yes, during the time he was employed in government service.
You know that, do you?
Yes, I do.
Did you collect communist dues from him?
Yes, I did collect dues from him.
Miss Bentley, were there any other members of the Silvermaster Group that you have not mentioned?
Yes, just one more. And that man was not a communist, but he did give information.
Who was he?
His name was Lockland Curry.
Where was he employed?
He was an administrative assistant in the White House.
What type of information did Lockland Curry give?
Well, because of his particular position, he was able to give information on administrative policies, our relations with various governments, including China. And one time, he gave us the information that the American government was about to break the Soviet code.
What did you then do with that information about the knowledge the Russians had?
I relayed that information on to the Russians.
Miss Bentley, just exactly how did you transmit the material from Washington to New York? Did you carry it on your person?
Well, in the earlier days, when there was not too much material, I could carry it in my pocketbook. As time went on, it got much more voluminous. Much of it had to be microfilmed. And the material that I would bring back on one trip alone would fill a knitting bag or a shopping bag.
You'd probably like to know what kind of material communist couriers did carry and still do carry. Well, just to give you a few examples. From the Pumpkin Papers, the Amerasia and the Copland Documents, and the Fuchs Trial, we know the communists got inner secrets of Western European diplomacy, which gave Stalin the very diplomatic information he needed to make his decisions. They got essential formulas for the atomic bomb. They got certain counterintelligence operations of the FBI. They got top secret classified or confidential information on many phases of the naval picture in the Far East. They got information on targets in Japan, seaplane bases in Japan, Formosa, and Korea. They got the entire counterintelligence plan of ONI within the United States. Now that seems like quite a lot, doesn't it? Well, these stolen secrets are only a few of the secrets vital to American security that communists operating in our government have sent back to Moscow. It was the knowledge that they had our atomic secrets which enabled the Russians to proceed so confidently with their conquest of the Far East, which included such diversionary tactics as the guerrilla warfare in Indochina, the move into Tibet, and of course the war in Korea. It is also giving our boys in Korea something to think about. They think about it every time an enemy weapon, radar on, comes at them, whether they're on the ground or in the air, because the secret of the radar-aimed weapons was one of the prized plums delivered to the Russians by the Red Underground within our government under the New Deal and the Fair Deal administration. Now, what do you, as Americans, really think about all this? What do you think now of President Truman's statement that he made 7 times to the press that the Alger Hiss case was a red herring? What do you think about Dean Acheson's ready acceptance of the Communist Party line that the Chinese communists were merely agrarian reformers? This was the thinking that inspired the Fair Deal sellout of the Chinese government which fought with us against Japan, the government that is still waiting for the aid that was promised, the aid that never came to help them in their fight against the Chinese Red. Today, because of all this, you know who is bearing the brunt of that fight. Our own men in Korea. Our own boys in Korea who are today facing weapons developed for our use that were stolen by the communists who have infiltrated into our government. Now, the Democratic candidate for president, when he recently spoke on the communist in government question, cautioned us against getting too excited about these matters for fear that charges might be recklessly leveled against innocent people. He said, let's not burn down the barn to catch the rat. There we agree with him. In the effort to root communism out of our government, we must not sacrifice our constitutional liberties. But still, the stubborn fact remains. We must get rid of the rat. On the record, this administration has no plan for rat catching, none whatsoever. Does the Republican Party have one? Listen. Please listen carefully. For 20 years, these mortal enemies of ours have been growing and thriving in the organism of the Democratic Party. Like rotten apples, they have hung everywhere concealed among the healthy fruit in the branches of our government. There is only one way to dislodge them. We must shake them all out of the tree. The tree of government must be shaken hard. Then these rotten apples, these mortal enemies, will fall out, above all from the top branches. Patriotism is the prerogative of no party. We believe that millions of Democratic voters today want, as we do, above all, to protect the safety of America. And because they do, they are turning to the Republican team. They are turning to Republican presidential candidate General Dwight D. Eisenhower and the Republican vice presidential candidate Senator Richard Nixon. They know that the safety of every man, woman, and child in America depends on rooting the traitors out of our government. And that's why millions of us believe that a vote for Eisenhower on November the 4th is a vote for the safety of America.
Next Tuesday, you have the opportunity of joining patriotic Republicans and Democrats in repudiating an administration too long in power, too soft on communists. This is your chance to clean our national house. Vote for Eisenhower.
The facilities of this station for the past half hour were engaged by the Republican State Central Committee. The preceding program was transcribed. WHO.